Sorry, I just need to find space here. I have it in my spot. Okay. So I believe it, we're on still on page one here. And it's the one, two, three, the fourth paragraph. The second line, that's where I kind of stopped there. Oh, no, what am I saying here? I'm wrong. I should have marked that.
At the bottom of the fourth paragraph. We just finished the fourth paragraph.
I think we're in the grip of this practice. No, the bottom
paragraph. Yeah, the end of the second... The top of the second page, we just finished the fourth paragraph.
Oh, yes. Okay. So we're on page two, and I'll pick up where, although this is not an effort of the mind or the body, a spontaneous expression arises. When it is expressed, you won't feel unfamiliar or suspicious. Okay, everyone got that okay? Okay. So, interesting. This here, I think, is the great mystery and challenge of our practice. We make effort, but at some point, the I making the effort becomes an obstacle. And we have to surrender to what is already present. And surrender invites humility. It invites humility to arise and then opens us to our true nature, the wholeness of our life. It is just the expression of our Dharma, although vast and beautiful. It doesn't seem exotic or unfamiliar. True expression, as Dogen and Suzuki Roshi describe it, is not fancy, it's not zenny. Following the old masters of old, it's just found even in the basic activities, basic actions of our daily life. And then Suzuki Roshi expands on this a little bit. And again, this is from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. He says, if you want to express yourself, your true nature, there should be some natural and appropriate way of expression. Even swaying to the right and left as you sit down or get up from zazen is an expression of yourself. It's not preparation for practice or relaxation after practice. It is simply part of practice. One of the instructions for doing Zazen meditation when we read the Fukan Zazengi and other writings by Dogen is we take our posture and to kind of like find the center, we rock a little bit back and forth to kind of find our center of gravity and really settle in that. Often that's described as we're preparing for practice. But Suzuki Roshi says, no, that's not the right attitude. It is practice. When we do that wholeheartedly, we are already expressing the Dharma. We are already fully giving expression to our life. So Dogen continues in the Dotoku. And yet, when you express such an expression, you beyond express a beyond expression. Even if you recognize that you express within an expression, if you do not thoroughly realize beyond expression as beyond expression, it is not yet the face of a Buddha ancestor, nor is it a Buddha ancestor's bones and marrow. Well, I read this over a number of times, and I hope that Tanahashi Sensei, the translator, will forgive me. But this translation is rather confusing. Beyond expression, when I looked at the Japanese, it kind of means like non-expression or not expression. But Tanahashi Sensei often uses beyond rather than simply not in his translations. And I think he has valid reasons for doing so. So my sense of this is when we express Dharma, we also go beyond the non-expression of Dharma. You know, there's always a danger of thinking, now I got it. Now I understand. Ah, this is it. But we can't stop there. We have to go beyond whatever we think as reaching the terminus or the end of our practice. When a Zen practitioner has a strong spiritual experience, right, a great Satori or Kensho experience, and that person is really excited about it, they are said to stink of Zen. They stink of Zen. Expression also includes an expression that goes beyond. Somehow, and again, not through anything we do, we have to go beyond expression, and also, as Dogen says, beyond non-expression. And I think what he's trying to tell us here is we have to let go of our understanding of expressing the Dharma, of expressing our life. Or we won't be fully expressing, after all. We're kind of caught in our idea of what it means to express. So here's my analogy, and I'm not quite sure this works, but maybe it will help. When we love somebody, we may think, well, I love them this way, I love them that way. But if we hang on to our idea of how we love them, we won't be able to express our love in a moment that calls for perhaps a softer expression or a more courageous expression. Dogen reminds us that true expression also has to include non-expression, just as a conversation includes both talking and silence. Just as helping somebody at times means doing something and at times doing nothing, but simply leaving them alone. There is no answer to hang on to. The face of a Buddha ancestor and a Buddha ancestor's bones and marrow that phrase there generally refers to a kind of levels of understanding, levels of insight. But I think here Dogen is using it more for emphasis on the importance of not clinging, not hanging on to, not grasping to what we think we understand. I'll just read the next little part of the fascicle here. In this way, how can the expression of bowing three times and standing in the original position by Hueka be the same as an expression of those who view the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow? The expression of those who view the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow as separate from one another cannot touch or include the expression of bowing three times and standing in the original position. An encounter of view with other as an encounter of separate beings remains an encounter of others with you as an encounter of separate beings. Well, this is needs a little unpacking. And to do that, we need to review a couple of old Zen stories, which Dogen is referring to here. So first of all, I'd like to talk about Hueka. He's the figure here who bows three times. Okay, so Hueka was a Chinese scholar monk, famed for his mastery of Buddhist texts, who heard that Bodhidharma, this Indian monk who brought the practice of Zen from India to China, heard that Bodhidharma was living and meditating in a cave. And Hueka decided to ask Bodhidharma to become his teacher because he was feeling unsatisfied with his own understanding and practice. And Bodhidharma refused a number of times, according to the legend. So Hueka cut off part of his arm to show his deep sincerity towards practice. And at that point, Bodhidharma agreed. Okay, you obviously you're pretty sincere. I'll take you as a student. What's the problem? And Hueka cried out, "My mind is not at rest." Whereupon Bodhidharma then turned to Hueka and said, "Okay, bring me your mind and I will put it at rest." So Hueka went away and kind of struggled with this for a while, pondering over Bodhidharma's comment, and then finally came back after a while and said, "I have searched. I have searched and searched for my mind and I cannot find it." "There," Bodhidharma proclaimed, "I have put your mind at rest." Years later, Bodhidharma was about to leave, return to India, according to legend, and he wanted to give Dharma transmission to one of his four main disciples. And this story comes out of a collection called Transmission of the Light, a collection of Zen stories. So these four disciples are now standing before Bodhidharma, and they begin to give their expression of the Dharma so that supposedly Bodhidharma will decide who's going to become his successor. So a couple of Chinese names here, but don't worry. Daofu stepped forward and said, "It is not bound by words and phrases, nor is it separate from words and phrases. This is the function of the way." Oh, pretty good answer, I think. Bodhidharma said, "You have attained my skin." Then the Buddhist nun Dzongchi stepped up and said, "It is like a glorious glimpse of the realm of Akshobhya Buddha. Once seen, it need not be seen again." And Bodhidharma said, "Oh, you have attained my flesh." Then the other monk, Daoyu, stepped forward and said, "The four elements are all empty The five skandhas are without actual existence. Not a single dharma can be grasped. And Bodhidharma said, ah, you have attained my bones. And finally, Hweka came forth, bowed deeply in silence three times and stood straight up. And Bodhidharma said, ah, you have obtained my marrow. And again, according to legend, Hweka became the first Chinese patriarch of the Zen tradition. In other words, he got the transmission. So traditionally, this is often understood as a kind of stories of levels of awakening. But for Dogen, no. The skin, flesh, bones, and marrow each thoroughly represented the essence of the teaching. And Dogen, I think, really expressed this beautifully in another piece of writing that he did, Dogenjo Koan. He said this, in the practice of the Buddha way, meeting one thing is mastering it. Doing one practice is practicing completely. In other words, just what you're doing at this moment, fully expressing it, fully doing it, is fully expressing the Dharma. I was noticing at this point within the fascicle itself, the dotoku fascicle, a shift seems to happen in this essay. Up until now, we may be thinking something like, how wonderful it is to express the Dharma. I express the Dharma. Or I am an expression of the Dharma. You know, quite cool. But now Dogen shifts the essay a bit, and I think we enter into a larger field, the expression of our life to others, to the world. It's no longer just me. And of course, it never really was just me, right? Hweka's bowing was his Dharma expression to Bodhidharma, as were the words of the Buddhist Nang Zongzi, the monk Daowu, and the other monk Daofu. These were all full expressions of the Dharma given to Bodhidharma. That's Dogen's understanding. Why does Dogen say beyond expression? In this little piece of writing, I think he's trying to tell us something very profound and rather challenging to explain. He's pointing out the great paradox of this world. The paradox is we are both part of the totality of everything, woven into the fabric of the universe, and at the same time, unique, expressing this totality through ourselves in unique ways. We're identifiable as separate, and we're identifiable yet not separate. Identifiable yet not separate. And each expression, the expression of the monks and nun that faced Bodhidharma, each of those expressions, Dogen says, is full and yet not complete. Why not complete? Because it is impossible to have complete expression of the totality of all. But it can be full at that moment, that person, fully expressing where they are, fully expressing their life at this moment. So I think this is reinforced in this next little passage here. An encounter of you with other, as an encounter of separate beings, remains an encounter of others with you as an encounter of separate beings. You have expression and beyond expression. Other has expression and beyond expression. Expression has you and other. Beyond expression has you and other. So Dogen covers all his bases here. It's his way of saying, well, each one of us has our own Dharma expression, our own way of fully showing our life into this world. That also includes what we cannot express, includes everything else and everyone else at the same moment. We express, and at the same time, what is not expressed is still present. Each expression, of course, is unique, and yet each is fully inclusive. We cannot dance, for example, without a dance partner. I'm getting into this idea of expressing that goes beyond just me expressing. So we cannot dance without a dance partner. And at times, this partner that we is somebody else. We dance with another person. At times, we dance with a child. At times, we dance with our dog or our cat. At times, we simply are dancing with the air flowing across our face. At times, we dance with something we cannot name. But the Dharma expression has you, it has the other, it has everything. There is nothing left out. So Dogen uses this language to try express what is really inexpressible. He's trying to indicate for us, maybe even give us an experience of the ineffable here. And language can do this. Here's two examples that are not from Dogen that I thought were getting close to this point. The Tao Te Ching, the Taoist text, begins with the lines that go like this. The way that can be told is not the eternal way. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. And that may seem a bit too philosophical or lofty, so let me give you a more down-to-earth example. Busan is a famous Japanese haiku poet. And here's a haiku of his, translated by Sam Hamill, who's quite well known as a poet himself and translator. And the haiku goes like this. Sweet springtime showers, and no words can express how sad it all is. Maybe today we say sweet springtime snow showers, and no words can express how sad it all is. I thought it was quite clever, Busan saying no words can express, and yet immediately begins to express how sad it is that no words can express these beautiful spring shower days. Let's pick up Dogen again here. Jiaozhou, great master Zenji, said, "If you sit steadfastly without leaving the monastery for a lifetime and do not speak for 5 or 10 years, no one will call you speechless. After all, even Buddhas will not equal you. Even Buddhas will not equal you. In this way, when you think of the practice and endeavor of not leaving the monastery for a lifetime, staying in the monastery for 5 or 10 years, going through frost and flowers, the steadfast sitting that has been sat through is a certain expression. Walking, sitting, lying down without leaving the monastery is the practice of no one, is the practice of no one will call you speechless." I didn't quite copy that right. "Although how the lifetime comes about is beyond our knowledge, if you activate without leaving the monastery, you do not leave the monastery." What kind of invisible path is there between the lifetime and the monastery? Just investigate steadfast sitting. Do not avoid no expression. No expression is expression from beginning to end. So Jiaozhou is describing a life of Zazen, the steady continuity of daily practice. He's saying that is a life full of Dharma expression, meaning no one will find you speechless. No one will say, you weren't speaking the Dharma then. And Dogen agrees. Following a monastic schedule, experiencing the hardships and beauty, the frost and flowers of a life of Dharma expression. All of one's activities are the expression of the Dharma. How a lifetime comes about is beyond our knowledge. If you activate without leaving the monastery, you do not leave the monastery. What kind of invisible path is there between the lifetime and the monastery? Well, that's certainly true, isn't it? This life is a mystery. We do not know the depths, where it came from, or how it flows on. In our Zazen, over time, we become aware of the profound and unspeakable nature of simply being alive. In the stillness of the heart and stillness of the mind, in the silence of the Zendo, sometimes we can sense the invisible path that is our life. A commentary I found in one of the koans that Dogen collected before he came back from China states this: "A lifetime without leaving the monastery is a lifetime of expounding the Dharma." In other words, a lifetime without leaving the expression of the truth of our life, fully expressing ourselves. In this practice that we do, our whole life becomes the monastery. Our whole life is the place of our practice. Our whole life is the expression of the Dharma. No need, as Dogen tells us elsewhere, to go off to the dusty realm of other lands. And over time, we come to feel the invisible path between this lifetime and practice. The invisible path that is the expression of your life. I think Dogen teases us a little bit here. He asking, what kind of invisible path is it? Show me your invisible path now. And if I was one of those old Zen teachers, I would say, quick now, how do you answer? Show me your invisible path. Another way of saying, show me the fullness of your life now, in front of me. Dogen writes, steadfast sitting is one lifetime, two lifetimes, not merely one time, two times. If you sit steadfastly without speaking for 5 or 10 years, even Buddhas will not ignore you. Indeed, such steadfast sitting without speaking is something Buddha eyes cannot see, Buddha power cannot pull away, Buddhas cannot question. So this life, your life, is a life without leaving the monastery. In other words, it is a life of a full expression of your life and beyond the full expression of your life. And this life expression, this Dharma expression, is not hindered by what we may think a good Buddha expression should be, right? Quite often we come, you know, I want to be a good meditator. I want to be a good Zen practitioner. No. And it's not hindered by what we imagine a Buddha or a teacher's criticism may be of our life and our practice. Don't let that get in the way either. In our Zazen practice, the seeming separation that we always feel between ourselves and others begins to fade and indeed falls away. This practice can reveal the totality of interdependent origination, this intimacy that we share with all sentient and insentient beings. In our Zazen practice, we settle our whole body, our whole heart and mind into the interpenetrating reality. Such, Dogen writes, is the force, the power of Zazen practice, right? Even Buddha power cannot pull away. Buddhas cannot question. This sincere practice that we do. Going back to the passage I read earlier, what Jiaozhou meant is that the expression of beyond expression in steadfast sitting is why Buddhas cannot call the person speechless or beyond speechless. Thus, not leaving the monastery for a lifetime is not leaving expression for a lifetime. Sitting steadfastly without speaking for 5 or 6 years is expression for 5 or 6 years. So here, Dogen kind of spells it out for us. Steadfast sitting, this is Zazen practice, is Dharma expression. Speech is also Dharma expression. Silence is also a Dharma expression. Your whole life is Dharma expression and beyond expression. Please do not think otherwise. It's not a matter of doing something special or gaining something that you do not already have. In Zazen, we awaken to it. Almost like waking up in the bed where we have always been anyway throughout the night. But even though that may be saying too much, Dogen would probably give me a whack across the hand for saying that. It is not leaving beyond expression for a lifetime or expressing beyond attainment for 5 or 6 years. It's cutting through 1,000 Buddhas by sitting. It is 1,000 Buddhas cutting through you by sitting. Well, I sense here Dogen is telling us, look, don't be confused. It's not that we have to somehow transcend Dharma expression, or we must express beyond some level of attainment or awakening, that we have to somehow keep our nose to the grindstone. He says, look, don't get confused. Cut through all of that lofty teachings that we read and hear about, and just return to sitting. Opening the hand that's grasping for an answer, grasping for a solution, a vision, a conception. And as you sit, the Buddha nature of the entire universe, the 1,000 Buddhas, is expressing the Dharma through you. Steadfast sitting, with or without speaking, for 5, 6, 10 years, is full expression for 5, 6, 10 years. Well, I believe I have thoroughly confused everybody. I hope that's okay. Sometimes that's the job of a teacher, to fully confound. But what I think, I hope you can take away from this bit that we have covered, is perhaps simply some word or phrase for you to hold, maybe to ponder upon. Dogen speaks to each of us, but he doesn't always say the same thing. We read the words, we listen to, you know, someone yammering on in a Dharma talk, but the voice that you really need to hear, and which we'll talk about in a little bit, is the speechless voice. But to hear the speechless voice, you're going to have to tune in this afternoon. And I'll talk about the speechless voice. And for now, I think we'll stop here. And we'll sit. And then we'll have service together. And I believe Susan will be...
I hope they got that message.
Good.
Can Susan be Doshi?
Right. So Susan will be Doshi. Great. Thanks. So I think they got the message.
Yeah.
Thank you all. Okay. So let's maybe go ahead with Kinhin, and then we'll sit. Thank you so much for listening. See you this afternoon.